bases loaded and one out.
Oh, my God.
Deep to right field. Way up there and way out of here. Second deck walk-off home run. Grand slam.
Hello and welcome in, everyone, to episode 206 of the Base Loaded Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Kurland. You can follow me on X at Mike_Kurland. Joined by my loyal and trusty sidekick. I'm going to do this again. I'm just going to keep doing every podcast. I'm going to come up with something new to say. George, you follow him on Twitter at @Roto_Nino. George, what's up, buddy?
What's up, man? Hey, 2 weeks in a row.
I know. The boys are back in town. For now. And when the season starts, we'll be back to not probably doing this as often. But that's neither here nor there. Let's enjoy draft season while we have it.
And, right? I mean, draft season's the best anyways.
Yeah. And it's the most helpful. Most of the stuff in season, including what I do with Bubba, it's just like it's a lot of the same stuff. So I know we can offer something a little different, but that takes effort and time. And maybe, I mean, if we keep with the schedule, I guess we'll figure it out. But today we're just going to talk about navigating some of the early rounds. We're going to go we're going to look at it like from the, I guess, 15 teamers. We can talk some 12 teamer stuff, obviously, but we're going to focus on the top 100 picks, kind of go round by round for the over the top 100 picks, and just discuss like some of our favorite players and some of the players that we don't care for at their cost, and discuss maybe some roster construction ideas for those who play DCs like we do, because that's what kind of we're focused on right now. I don't know about you, but I put the ADP from December 1st to today, the 10th. So there's 26 picks, it looks like, since then. Seems like a pretty big sample size.
Yeah.
And I don't know, navigating the early rounds, I keep it simple. I think we talked about it a little bit last show, so we'll do it here. Is I usually like to go hitter in the first round, and I'm trying a few different things. I'm going to go hitter. I think I might go three hitters in a row and then go pitching. I just did the double closer thing. I didn't like that. But typically, I like to go my first five rounds. I like to get three pitchers and two hitters. I could see myself going three hitters and two pitchers type of thing, though, maybe, and going that route. I can try, but I tend to trust my process to get hitters as it goes. So what do you do? How do you do with the first few rounds?
Yeah, we kind of touched on that last week. But yeah, I'm with you. I like to earlier in the draft season, like maybe even like a month ago, like you could go three hitters and then go three pitchers, at least. We're talking mostly these like 15 team draft and holds that we've been doing.
Yeah.
Because I mean, like Pablo Lopez was going in round four, Grayson Rodriguez and Yoshinobu Yamamoto, like guys like that were going like in round six. But we're starting to see like a lot of like pitching already getting pushed up, and it's only going to get more and more pushed up the farther along we get into draft season. So, you know, like Yamamoto's a third rounder now in the drafts that I've seen. So now I think I like to go, yeah, two hitters and a pitcher in my first three rounds, depending on where I'm picking from, but then grabbing two more pitchers in the top five rounds. So yeah, I'm right there with you. I think the early rounds are just kind of you know, just setting your base for your roster construction. And for me, it's not so much about targets and fades, more so just about how I want to build my team, and setting that foundation. Maybe like I mentioned it last week, like diversifying a little bit if you're doing multiple drafts. So like I've done three DCs now, and I've picked third and second. So I've only picked in the top in DCs, and like I got one Bobby Witt, I got one Corbin Carroll, and I got one Julio Rodriguez. Just to kind of, I mean, I think they're all really good. You know, 5x5 fantasy players, and so I just kind of mixed it up there and build off of them.
Yeah, I haven't. I don't know. I've been getting a lot of mid to later round picks. I got fifth in this draft. I drafted first in a Gladiator, so it was just new, and I realized how much more I'm enjoying the top half of the drafts so far. Yeah. Obviously, I only have one pick in. I got Betts at five. I'm okay. I love that. I love Betts. He's like he's like in my top three. So if I get him at five, it's fine. But I have a solid top seven. And I think it's pretty much in consensus with ADP. But I'm not going pitcher in the first round, and I don't know. I guess like I have Strider as my number one, but I haven't seen unless he falls like his max pick over since December 1st is 13. So if he fell around there, then sure, I would scoop him up there pretty quickly. But mm-hmm. He never gets past seventh usually for me. And I don't want to take him over guys like Tatis, Freeman, Turner, maybe Turner. I like Judge more than consensus. Judge is going around 11th off the board, but max of 17, min of 8. I think Judge is underappreciated. I know there's some injury concerns there, but he's healthy. And we know even in limited playing time, he still hit like 37 home runs, like 100 something games last year. So it's like he doesn't need a full complement of games to provide close to like the value he can. You know what I mean? So I like Judge more. So I guess we can just start with the first 15 picks. That's for the first round guys here. The ones that really stand out to me, Judge falling all the way to like 11th, 12th on average, roughly. Juan Soto's right there. I know there's people who like Soto over Judge. I get it. I don't. I have it Judge Soto personally, but I will take either one right there, honestly. My Ohtani, I want to talk about here in a moment, but Gerrit Cole is probably my biggest fade in the first round. And it was just because I noticed with him just a lot of things that scared me in his profile. Let me see if I can find that. I have a tweet. I think it's either scheduled or it's here. So there's a lot with things that just caught my attention with him. So last year, 2023 for Gerrit Cole was the second straight season we saw a decline in both K-minus walk rate and chase rate. So, okay, some red flags. Fourth straight season with a decline in swinging strike rate, like fourth consecutive season where there's been a decline in swinging strike rate. This is the lowest CSW since coming over to New York since 2017. Because he was Houston, then New York. But since 2017 when he was with the Pirates, lowest CSW since then. The highest contact rate in Sierra since 2017. And a notable dip in whiff per swing rate over the last 2 years. So, like, 3 years, it's like the last 2 years before 2023, it was like 30 something percent, and last year was like 26% in his whiff per swing percentage. So, one of those things where the swing and miss stuff is just showing a decline. There's a trend in declining here. And I'm not saying he falls off a cliff next year, but all those fancy numbers are pretty much saying, hey, there's some alarm bells going off here. We should really take notice. It doesn't help that we saw him, you know, sitting 97, 90, like high 96, 97, like 96.8, 97 with the four seamer, dip down to like 96.1 to finish last year in the final month. So was that fatigue setting in? Is it just about time that Gerrit Cole being what 34 and all those innings on under his belt? And he's 33, but I'm not sure if he's going to be 34. Probably going to be 34, I would guess. That's how aging, right? You turn a year older. When you turn it. So, yeah, he's been like, so all those fancy numbers, but that's when it's been like, that's been kind of like the guy I just like, I get it. And I could easily egg on my face. I don't think he's going to turn 34 next year, actually. I think he's going to be 33 for the whole year. So, or close to it. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I'm nitpicking. My point is that Gerrit Cole, if there's a fade in the first round, it's him for me right now. And I think he's going to go there. I think he might drop into the second round. I'd be more willing to take him there, but I still have concerns that there's enough concerns there to where it's like I'll skip him and just go to the next guys behind him type of thing personally.
Yeah, I'm with you. If there's anyone that I could say like I'm probably not going to have any shares up in the first round, it would be Gerrit Cole. I can see myself taking just about anybody else there, depending on where I'm picking. But I mean the track record is obviously there with him. You mentioned the decline in the strikeouts. I think he's still, you know, going to be excellent. I just don't think there's that separation at this point between him and like the next year. So I'm a little bit more willing to like bypass him for like one of these hitters that can provide, you know, multi-category elite five category production, like Jose Ramirez. You mentioned Soto, Judge. So I'm with you. I'm not sure there's that separation between him and like the Kevin Gausman, Castillo. I put Pablo Lopez up there, Zach Wheeler. So yeah, I'm with you in fading Gerrit Cole in the first round. How do you feel about Ohtani in the first round? And you know, the big discussion with him there is obviously the UT only.
So I'm speaking from experience now because I think I have two or three Ohtani shares. One was in a 50, so that was actually easy to navigate. I have him in this most recent DC, and I love Ohtani, but I don't think in a DC. I want him here in a Fab League, and I'll explain the difference why. Because long story short, there's a ton of not only is there a ton of UT only people that I really like going later, but there's also players that are in the reserve rounds that are only UT only to start the year, and they might gain eligibility, and they usually will, but not all of them will, right? So now I can't even draft them. But if I really like them, I can't draft them. So like a guy, I don't know, Andrew McCutchen, guy that just will play every day, will play a lot. He's gonna play a ton. He's in the reserve rounds, but last year, 98 of his games, he played like 112 or 110 games, whatever it was, 102. I don't remember. It was like 98 of them were DH and only eight were at, only eight of them were in the outfield. So are we expecting him to get alpha eligibility? Maybe, but how long is it going to take? 2/3 of the year to get there, even half the year? So now that takes a player that I like that could be a good reserve round, just a guy that I can stream or a guy that, you know, whatever it could be. He's off my board now. So it limits you in ways that shouldn't matter necessarily. Like, do I really want, is McCutcheon going to make or break me? No. But now that's one less guy I count on. I know that's going to get playing time that I would normally target in those late rounds that I can't target on a team with Ohtani because I'm never going to sell Ohtani for him. And this guy's not going to get that eligibility soon enough for me. But also the guys that are UT only in the reserve rounds, and there's a number of them. Mark Vientos is one of them for reference. Guys that might get like just very, very, even just a minimal playing time, whatever it might be. But if I'm running into injuries, those guys don't have their eligibility yet. I can't plug them into UT and move that guy. Say the UT guy I had was an outfielder. I can't utilize, you know what I mean? With Ohtani, you don't have that ability to move Ohtani to a position. So that's where having that UT only, and you can make that argument for everyone else, but like if you have JD, Ozuna, whatever, insert UT only guy here, you can't make that same argument because by the time you're getting them, you're already formed your base of a build. And those are also guys that aren't on the level of Ohtani where if they're bad enough, you're benching them and you can replace them. So it's like you're not benching Ohtani no matter what if he's playing. But those guys you can or will if they suck. So that's why Ohtani does create this little bit of a it's frustrating. And on top of that, every time I look at a team, I have a hole. I always feel like I have a bigger hole than I actually do. So I look at my teams with Ohtani and I see, oh, like one team has really, really weak first base options, right? But then I realized, oh, well, that type of that first base option would probably be my UT had I saved it, had I picked like Freeman instead of Ohtani. You know what I mean? So like, not, I didn't actually pick Freeman. I didn't pick Ohtani over Freeman for reference. It's just an example. Like if I took a first baseman in the first round or whatever, then Ohtani, so the UT would still be weak. But I like that flexibility more without him being there for DCs. Now, Fab Leagues, there's so much depth off the waiver wire to stream, no matter what the position is. I don't think he's a hindrance at all in Fab League. But I do think there's a little bit of a hindrance there for DCs, just a small one, especially because you can't utilize him as a pitcher either. So that takes away part of what makes him so useful. But with that said, I would still take him. I just don't think I'm going to take much more in DC. I don't know. I kind of rambled, but I hope I kind of got that reasoning out there and it makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you. I love him. I don't mind taking him. I tend to want to leave that UT open just because like there's typically someone that falls like later in the draft that I want to put there in the UT spot, whether like if it's in the like 15th round, sometimes it's probably like a first baseman, a third baseman, maybe a shortstop. And in DCs, I mean, that's someone that, you know, if you got an injury, you can move them from UT to another position. And you can't do that. You can't do that with Ohtani. So now that reserve, you know, that guy that you would, that injury replacement turns into someone later down the line, maybe that you don't like as much. So yeah, that's why I typically just want to leave that UT open, just because if I find a value like that falls in the draft, I like to use that. But I won't say that like I won't have any shares of Ohtani because he's going to be incredible. I have some.
It's just one of those things where it's like, all right, I built this team recently that had him, really like the build because I attacked depth properly. And that's another thing with Ohtani, I just made sure like I prioritized dual eligible guys in the early in the reserve rounds. Like if I had like this guy or this guy, oh well, this guy has dual eligibility, this guy doesn't, I would give them the tiebreaker. Whereas maybe I wouldn't do that. Maybe I would pick the other guy where I don't need to worry about eligibility so much because my UT is just another player from another position. That's eligibility. That's depth right there. That's like, say it's a six outfielder in my UT spot. Great. That's an outfielder now. With Ohtani or any of the UT only guys, you have to now build in that depth into your reserve rounds because you can't utilize that UT as depth.
Right.
So it's one of those things where you can do it. It's very doable, but I think there's a little bit of a hindrance there for Ohtani. And a max pick of 18, min pick of 6. Dude, I just drafted him like 12th overall. So I took him ahead of ADP recently. No regrets because I really do like the team. And I think it'll be just fine. But I made sure I built my depth a certain way that I think I can handle it but it's still, it's frustrating. It's just one of those things where it's like, I don't want to have to deal with that on every team. So he's a guy that normally at this price, I'd be all over. And I think, and like I said, I'll reiterate that in Fab Leagues, I think Ohtani is a far better pick because that problem that we're talking about is far less of an issue when you have a free agent pool to pick from to fill needs.
Yeah. I guess I do definitely enjoy drafting in the top of the first round a lot.
And
the few that I've done, just because there is a drop off at the end of the third. I feel like there's a pretty significant drop off. Like seeing, like, especially in the pitching.
You're getting so ahead, like, of things here. So let's talk the second round.
All right. Yeah, let's go second round.
Well, we can talk about it real quick and we'll go back to the second round. So you're talking about third round, the drop off in pitching?
Yeah. So once you get past that turn, first, second round turn, I feel like there's like a drop off.
Gallen, Lopez, Kirby, like right around there is that turn, and then Glasnow. You can argue Skubal, Nola becomes kind of like that, like oh, do I really want them as my one? And then and then Freddie Peralta is like, oh, Yamamoto's definitely been, he has a min of 30, so Yamamoto's in the mix.
Yeah, exactly. And Yamamoto, he's not gonna be, his ADP is 55, it's gonna be in the 30s as well. once we get more DCs completed,
it'll
signing. Be. So if you're looking at, like, if you didn't take Gerrit Cole, if you didn't take Corbin Burns to start the second, then you're, and to me, like, I don't think there's a huge, like I said, I don't think there's a huge drop off between Cole, Burns, and then the next three or four guys that you could take at the back of the second. So now you're looking at, like, your SP1 as, Aaron Nola, Tarik Skubal, Freddie Peralta. I don't love that.
And yeah, so that's why I get, like, the idea of going three hitters is really fun, but I don't like the idea of, I don't like those guys being my ace, like that back end right there. I'm not comfortable with it if I can avoid it. With the, like, Nola is like that fringe guy where if I believe that Nola's gonna be better this year, so I have Nola as my ace in DCs, but I don't know if I wouldn't want to go into the year with Nola as my ace in a Fab League. I just don't think, I don't know what it is. I don't know if there's a difference there. Maybe it's in my head. But that's like where I kind of draw the line personally, right there, right around that Nola range. And I don't know. That's why it scares me to build out three hitters. But then it's like, it's funny because I say that, but then I look at the next set of pitchers. I'm like, man, I can go three hitters and get three of these guys, like the Logan Webbs. Like, I can get Max Free. You kind of get your, even Blake Snell, if you want to shoot for upside a little bit, then if you pair Snell with Webb, that's like on a turn, that wouldn't be a bad deal just because you're getting some strikeouts and you're getting the ratios and you're getting innings. So it's one of those things where you can build out a solid, you can get Senga, Grayson Rodriguez, you can get these guys if you really wanted to. And then it's like, well, did I really miss out on pitching? No, I just built for, you built to attack that part of the range, but now you might miss out on closers. Because if you want to make sure you get the proper build in pitching, it's going to push your closer strategy down a little bit. So, and for you, that's probably great. I could see you going hitter, 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 pitcher, 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 and then eventually landing on some saves whenever you feel like it. But it's one of those things where, like, it's really tempting because, like I just mentioned, like I sound like the idea of going hitter, hitter, hitter isn't so appealing when I think about missing on these aces. But then when I think about, wait, I can try this. I really want. I think I'm going to try it with one of my DCs, loading up with the round four through six guys, loading up on three of those guys and just seeing how I like it, seeing how I like that really top heavy hitting style with a very solid floor pitching. It's going to lack the ace. Unless you believe in, like, Rodriguez or Senga taking that step forward and you make a point to get one of those guys, then you have your ace, I guess. And one of those guys, you know, there is a likelihood that one of those guys turn into a fringe first, second round pitcher next year. You know, it's just the way it goes, but it's about hitting on the right guy. Obviously at the end of the day though, it's a comfort level thing. You have to be comfortable there. So we're getting ahead of ourselves, but in the second round, we'll go pick 16 through 30. And in this range, I haven't found myself. I love Bryce Harper. I think Bryce Harper, I've taken him in the first round, like the end of the first. So Bryce Harper in the pick 17th or 17th overall. I love him there. Matt Olson, I'm fine with him with the power, the four categories, 3.5. I don't know if I trust the batting average. J-Ram, because the counting stats, man, that team is awful. And his speed isn't as elite as, like, it doesn't make him better anymore or like special. I get why he's falling. I like him at the back end. That's why picking at the back end isn't bad. I have no problem going J-Ram, Bryce, J-Ram, Olson, Bryce Olson, just stacking all that power. That's fun. I think that there's a strategy there that gives you a little bit of upper hand in ways that other people don't have. But then obviously you have to be okay with what falls for pitching. But in terms of avoids, I think Ellie is the obvious one for most people. He's a guy I'm not really touching at that price right now. I get it. I see the appeal, but personally, Ellie's just it's just a matter of being skeptical of the of him being hitting that ceiling. I think the tools are very much there, but I see players around here like Lindor, like Albies, like Devers, proven commodities that I know are more bankable. That's where I think my preference goes in a 12 or an O, like an OC where you're doing a 12 teamer. Ellie would be a fun play. I would make. I'd be more likely to make that play there because I think it's easier to replace if he screws up or sucks. But that's kind of the. I think he's the low hanging fruit. I'm trying to find another name. I feel like the second round picks are fine. He's kind of the only name, the obvious name to kind of pull out. Seager kind of scares me because suddenly he's healthy. Like we're buying into that. I think the skills are legit though. So I don't know. Gunner feels kind of rich for his price. But I think there's another step there that maybe he didn't reach. So I get it. I don't know. Is there anybody here that kind of stands out to you?
I mean, other than Ellie, and I think a lot of that goes to like I really want to establish batting average early. I found that like it really opens up the player pool down the line if you have a really good like batting average established and you're not spending the next several picks trying to make up that batting average with players that are gonna like not give you power or not give you speed. Like these guys that provide like the five category production with the, or even the elite four category production with the batting average, I really like to take. So if I'm risky, like if I take Ellie, I feel like I have to make up batting average. And it really closes off a lot of players down the line in the player pool that you can't take, like a Max Muncy or
Schwarber.
Kyle Schwarber, if he falls.
Not that you want him anyway.
But. Yeah, right. But yeah, a lot of guys that can fall. It really closes off the player pool. Or like if you're looking for like late steals down the line in DCs, like you know guys like Drew Waters. Maybe like Jared Kelenic in the 200s. I just feel like, yeah, if you have a really good batting average established, it really opens up the player pool down the line. So that's the big thing for me as far as fading Ellie.
Gotcha. So yeah, so Ellie, it's just one of those things where, And otherwise, like I said, the second round is just full of safe and solid picks. I don't really have any like Ozzy. I don't know. I guess I've just never been much of an Ozzy guy, and maybe that's a me problem because Ozzy bounced back last year. So I don't think Albies is really much of a concern, and he hits it, like towards the top of that order. So I don't know.
Yeah, if I'm there in the mid second,
usually you'll
pick like him. I'm probably not. I'm kind of with you. Ozzy did bounce back big time last year, but like he's not giving you like the steals. Like the new base rules like didn't really help him with the steals. Like he only stole 13. I'm not sure he's gonna steal 20-30 bases that we know like he probably could. I just don't think that's what he's gonna do. And then I could definitely see like the batting average coming back down. You know, the previous two seasons it was 259, 247. He did like overperform his expecting batting average quite a bit. It was 266, which is still like sure probably going to be fine. There's probably a good 260, 265 floor there if things don't go right. But it's just like I said, little nitpicking. Like I'm probably just going to go ahead and take, like I said, like I think there's a drop off in the pitching. So I'll take a Gausman. I'll take a Castillo. I'll take a Pablo Lopez. Other than that, it comes down to, yeah, I mean, how you want to construct your roster. And you want to take a Pete Alonso. I mean, he's for hitting like what he hit, like what under 220 for such a bad batting average last year. I mean, to still be going in the second round.
I think we all view it as more of like an outlier of I don't think the batting average, I don't think it's going to repeat that low personally either. I'm kind of like, yeah. And then if you look at the next set of picks, obviously like Luis Robert, he was so good at the injury at the end of the year. Just reminds me that even the best year for him, I think, what did he go 40-20 or something like that, or just missed it? I think it was one of those, like he was right there. Let me see. But either way, he's one of those guys like I haven't landed. He's 38-20. I think being out on him is silly given the skill set, but man, those injuries scare me. And I also, to be fair, I haven't picked at the beginning of a draft pretty much all offseason, so I haven't had the chance to take him. He doesn't fall to the mid to late third for me. He has a max of 42, but I've never seen him fall past like the mid to late second round, maybe early third type of thing. So I haven't landed on Michael Harris. Michael Harris is also, it feels like Sid Mullins all over again. Like, I think Harris is better for, like, I want to be very clear about that. But it just reminds me, like, the skill set and the draft price, it just reminds me of Sid Mullins heading into last year. But I think Harris isn't, he's not platoon risk. It's just, will he ever move up that lineup?
I don't know. You know, with Luis Robert, I would be a lot more into him. I haven't taken him either, and I probably won't. I would be a lot more into him if the way he got to his 38-20, just look like we saw just a huge spike in his strikeout rate, went up to 28.9%. He was just a lot more aggressive. His zone contact like really went down to below average. Swinging strike rate went really up.
You're betting on the tools.
If it didn't come with those, if it didn't come with just the big swing and miss, it was 264 with the 314 BABIP. I mean,
the fact that he hit 264 with just a 314 BABIP is kind of good. It's good. That's a good thing. BABIP was that low. Like 314 is not a high BABIP for someone like him. He's a career 334 BABIP guy. Yeah. He has had lower BABIPs like all outside of 1 year in 2021, but. I don't know. He's a fast guy. I'm surprised his BABIP isn't higher, but I don't know. It's just one of those things where I haven't been in a position to take him. So it's like, I get being out. I understand. Cause like I've been, I don't look at him and say, oh, I got to get him. I look at him like, I'm scared of the injury.
Right. And, yeah. And maybe, I mean, he did end the season with the MCL sprain.
I remember he was stealing second base and he heard it on a slide. That's like, what are you going to do? And Vlad, everyone's like hyping up Vlad. I've seen, you know, it's either you're in or you're out on Vlad. I think I lean more towards being out. I like the idea of Vlad. I think we all like the idea of Vlad, but I don't know. It's almost the same thing with his, you know, his teammate that's in the same round as him, as Bo Bichette, where it's, they don't like, it's, I don't know. It's, I think he could, I think this is, I think he's priced appropriately. Am I out on him right now? I guess I am, because I have no shares. But like right now, if for instance, I'm looking at, I have bets, right? I have bets on this team. If he makes it to pick 35, the way I'm building this team out, I don't know if Vlad becomes like, do I need Vlad or do I need to probably address speed? So that's when I look at like Luis Robert on this with bets. I would be more likely to take Luis Robert if he fell because he complements bets better. I don't want to have to go with more of like a CJ Abrams, just not my, I'm not huge. And I can talk, I guess the third, I guess I don't like the third round hitters. Because I find like I'm afraid of CJ Abrams. I can see it both directions with him. I can see Abrams being a stud and hitting on that prospect pedigree and that second half letting it shine through, even though the batting average was low. I'm kind of surprised how low it was considering the plus speed and how well the overall numbers were. I feel like it was just like a solid month, right? It was like it was a really good July that carried like some of the numbers in the second half. Because he ended up having similar splits in terms of like the home runs and stuff like that. He had a 4-0 WRC plus against lefties last year. Didn't know that. Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. He had 1 month with a WRC plus over 100 in July, CJ Abrams. That's why it's like that July carried a lot of the numbers here. It was the only month he had an OPS over 750. Sorry, 753 was the next highest. So it was the only time he had, oh my God, that July was stupid. It makes you wonder, like, was it just a hot month or is he more like that guy? I didn't realize he was that bad against lefties. 169 plate appearances, hit 166 against them with a 511 OPS. Huh. This is why you look at players. This is why you don't just assume ADP is right on them. And you can buy into all you want, but we're still, even with that July, he had a 733 OPS in the second half, 690 in the first half. I understand power is not his calling card. I do get that he is a stolen base guy. But man, that's still I'm scared of like, I, this just talked me out of him. I'm out on Abrams at this price. I don't see it. His on base, he was never even an OBP guy. You want him to steal bases. He has to get on base. His second half OBP was 306. The first half was 292. What are we expecting here for, I mean, he'll still steal, but man, there's a lot of warts in this profile that I didn't realize were there. Cause I didn't look at him that. I just never really looked at him that much this offseason. Huh.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I mean, he does make a lot of contact. He's a fast guy, so I mean,
that'll play up.
was just 22 last year. Big prospect pedigree. I don't mind Abrams. He is someone that you do have to build around, though. You're kind of expecting, like, all right, like, now I have to find power in RBI and probably got to make up some batting average.
Why take him there? Because why not just take Horner 2 rounds later? Like, I understand Abrams will still work. Like, Abrams just went 1847, right? Horner's not hitting 18 home runs, and he's probably not going to steal 47 bases. But Horner can hit close to 10 home runs and steal you, like, 35. Because I think he stole, like, 30 or 40 last year. So, Horner hits for better batting average. So, you're hedging your bets on the ceiling, but you're getting the floor. So, I don't understand. If you want Abrams, just wait and maybe hedge your bets a little bit. That's my personal look at it. And that's just how I see it. I understand the ceilings there with Abrams, but man, I'll take the 1 month. That 1 month, I knew it was a hot streak. He had like a really big month, and I knew it was July. No one's really talking about. Everyone's talking about first and second half. It was July. July. He had a 500 slug. Hit 3 of his 18 home runs. That's it. I'm surprised.
Yeah,
16 stolen bases.
I mean, he's going to. There's going to be inconsistencies with Abrams. I think for me, it's like, what are you getting in the end? And
do you think he can replicate this? Because I mean, again, 1 month carried his season line. He was dropped in leagues last year in 15s. I remember seeing him on waiver wires in 15s. Last year.
Yeah, I don't know. I think with Abrams, I think I'm just a little more like
optimistic.
I think I'm a little more willing to buy into it. Yeah. I'm not a big, like you mentioned Horner. Like Abrams had like 3 times as many barrels as Horner, I think.
Oh yeah.
Like,
Horner's not a power guy at all.
Like you're like it could be not like he hit 9 homers on 9 barrels. Like he could also just hit like 6 homers.
That's why I said he's like, a 10-homer guy. Like I wasn't saying Horner's any. That's why I was like, you're hedging your bets. Horner is like a Whit Merrifield. That's how I look at him, like an old school Whit Merrifield, like the good version where he would steal 40-ish, but like he'll only hit like 10 home runs if you're lucky. That's what that's what Horner gives you. But I think Abrams, everyone's dreaming on the, you know, I get it. The prospect pedigree's there, the upside's there, but man, this profile scares the little shit out of me. like you can't hit lefties. Is he gonna lead off all year, or is he gonna move up and down the lineup and lose some play appearances because he doesn't lead off against lefties part of the year? All right. So I don't think he's gonna lose playing time because they have no one else to play there, but I think he could lose some play appearances by moving down the lineup, right? Cool. And then you just see some of the other stuff. Like, yeah, I get it. He hits the ball well. Like, he makes great contact, but that's it. You're betting on contact and obviously stolen bases. I don't know. There's a path to 100 runs, so I guess you're getting 3 categories. I just don't know if I buy the batting average really improving all that much, maybe, unless he starts elevating the ball more. I don't know. Maybe if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I'm okay with being wrong on him, but I'm pretty sure I'm out.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, I'm a little more optimistic. I'm not completely out, but he's also not someone that like I'm gonna smash in the third round. Like it's like I want a share. I do have 1 share of Abrams, and that's probably gonna be it. Like I might make depending on like more drafts I do, but I think I want 1 share because if it does click, like it could be 20-50. Like
I want Abrams in the 4th round. Maybe if he was in the 4th round, I'd be way more willing. But Mike, it's a round difference. What's the difference? Because then I don't have to take him in the 3rd. I could take a closer if I want to build up on like a elite closer. I can take a more secure thing. I'll take Vlad over him, so I can take Vlad and him make sense to me. Like you pair them if you can. So it's one of those things where I think he would fit a roster. I think you could build better for him if you could take him around later. I don't like his max pick of 58. That is an easy scoop all day. A max pick like over since December 1st, that max pick being 58 for Abrams, easy. But sitting there like steadily in the 3rd, I just have a hard time taking over Bo Bichette. And I understand Bichette doesn't give you the stolen bases. I get that. But Bichette gives you everything else in a way more secure way. So it's like, yeah. Do I want my security or do I want the upside? I understand. And a 12 goes back to an OC. I'll take Abrams. Here, I'll pay this price on Abrams and a 12. Because again, it goes back to replace the potential for replacement value off the waiver wire. It goes back to you're shooting for that upside a little more because you need that to really compete. And especially in the overalls there for OCs. But I don't know. I'm looking at it through the lens of the dude. He struggles versus lefties. 1 strong month carried the whole season line. 16 of his 45 stolen bases. It was 16 of 47. So a fourth of his stolen bases basically came in 1 month. I know the speed's legit. It's a carrying tool, but there's so much there. It's like, was it a hot month or is he going to grow from here? Overall, people remember how good he was. Still only finished the year with a 90 overall, a 90 WRC plus, a WOBA and ex-WOBA that matched at 306. League average is like 305 ish, 304 or 302. It's really low. His OPS was still barely 700. I don't want to be having, I don't want these question marks and these red flags in the profile from a guy I'm taking as a third round pick. I think that's my issue. It's almost like we question Ellie, but we just accept Abrams because he flashed for a month. Ellie flashed for a bigger month. Ellie was the big, like, he was the biggest flash in the pan there was last year. And we question why we're questioning why he's going where he's going, but we're okay with one round later taking Abrams. I don't understand the comfort. I don't understand why people are so comfortable with it. Unless I'm missing something in the profile, unless you're betting on the fact that he's only 23, prospect pedigree, and has the skill set he has. So Abrams, I guess I'm out on that price because obviously I'm just poo-pooing on him, even though you're in. So look, we have a disagreement, but that's fine. I think I like that we don't agree on everything because we agree on a lot, and that can make for really shitty podcasting. Nobody wants to hear people just agree for an hour. And I like presenting things, but I don't know. I also am very dominant in talking, so people probably don't hear me.
I like, you mentioned Bo, and I did in my last DC, I did take Bo over over Abrams, and yeah, it's just I love the batting average floor. I mean, 306, 290, 298, 301, 311. I mean, those are his batting averages like since his career. Like, so he's projected for 292. Can we see if he's healthy next year, like can we see him go back up to, you know, 10, at least 10 steals? He does have he hits the ball all over the field. So I don't know if he if he can tap into, like, I'm sure there's more power to tap into with Bo, but like he's a pretty safe bet for, you know, 25 homers. And then I do think obviously the counting stats are going to be there. They weren't there last year, but I do think that Blue Jays offense in general could rebound a bit, and he could take a step forward with the counting stat. I would project him to have better runs in RBI than Abrams. So I do like Bo, and like it's like that batting average, because if you're taking Bichette, you're you're taking him in the top of the third or middle, top of middle of the third, you probably took a good hitter in the first, like in the early to mid first. So like you're really setting yourself up with that batting average that Bichette is giving you. Like you take a five category hitter in the first round, and then you take Bo Bichette in the third, someone who if CJ Abrams busts, he may not be a top 100 hitter. If Bo Bichette quote unquote busts, he's probably still, if he doesn't run, he's probably still gonna be a fifth round hitter. So I do like the safety with Bichette, and you do take two hitters, including Bichette, in the first three rounds. Like you can get your, it opens up your player pool, because you have that batting average set. It opens it up for speed guys that you could take later. Like maybe you could take a chance on middle infield down the line with Anthony Volpe, or maybe you take a Tyro Estrada, guys like that. You can make up those steals later on, you know, Cedric Mullins at 145.
I got some guys I like to go for speed. That's why I actually came. So in these DCs, and maybe I'll get around to it when I get through a couple of these DCs, because there's a couple guys I have no shares of that I'm going to change. So I'm not going to lie. I'm just not going to say their names right now. Sorry for those listening. I'll be helpful at a later date, but I'm just not going to say those names right now, because I want to make sure I get them. But there are guys that I look at, like poor man's Horners, poor man's Abrams, guys that I can count on the speed later. So it's like I don't prioritize a guy with a speed first carrying tool with other question marks in his game. So as much as I like Abrams, I really do like him as a player. I think the price is too rich for me, is all it is. If he was going closer to that max pick of in the 50s, I can get behind that all day, because as much as I love Royce Lewis, I think it's no secret I love Royce Lewis. I've never taken him in the third round. He fell to me in the fourth round of a Gladiator. I scooped him. I passed him in the fourth round. He fell to me in the fifth round, and I scooped him there. So I have a price for everybody. And it's but I was not touching Royce Lewis in the third round. I have zero Royce Lewis from the third round pick. But when he fell to the fourth and fifth, I was there on him. So if Abrams is there, I've seen Abrams fall to the fourth. I have no problem with Abrams in the fourth, but that's because I've already built around him. I've either built for him or I built a different direction. He fell there, and I see the appeal here, because now it leaves a little more room for error. Whereas we were taking him, I understand he could pop and be the next Trey Turner, but he can also be just what he was. And I don't know if I want 80 runs, 18 home runs, and 45 stolen bases in my third round pick. That doesn't feel like there's enough juice there hitting under 250. That could be, he could easily repeat, and I don't think repeating is what you're drafting him for. And so I don't know. I can't get behind the price. I haven't ran the SGP numbers on him either. We need more projection systems for that. So maybe once the SGP runs, you know, we run our SGP, maybe he'll prove to be value, like projected to be around there. But I don't know. Something tells me he's going to come in under that projection. So that's why it's like, as much as I want, I really do like him. I really do. But I really just don't like him for fantasy. Like, I like him more for real life. Like, as a player, he's fun to watch and makes the Nationals a fun team. But no one cares about real life. They want the fantasy aspect of things. So, yeah, I guess I can say I'm out, and that'll be against the norm. I don't think there's a lot of people that have been fading Abrams. I guess I could be that guy. Looking at after that, Glasnow, no one questions the skill. They question the health. Either you're in or you're out. This is your closers. We know you're out on closers here. I'm usually in on closers here. So we don't really have to talk about that. That's kind of how the top 45 fell out. I just talked about Royce a little bit. I don't know if you want to add to it, but he's going on average in the early fourth round. He fell to a max pick of 70. I wonder if that was my draft. He fell pretty far in mine. It was close. But are you a Royce Lewis guy in the fourth round, or is that still too much for you? That answer right there.
Yeah, I haven't landed on Royce.
I get it, man. I get it.
Fourth round, just because, like I said, like I've been just the way I've been building my teams. Yeah, I mentioned like this is where I'm taking another pitcher. So if I took a pitcher in the second or third, and just it whether it's like Gausman, Gausman is one of my guys there in the second, third, and Pablo Lopez. I want to come back around in the fourth with another guy, whether it's like Yamamoto if he's still there in the fourth, Framber, there's a Grayson I really like. So if I'm like in that range, like I don't mind, like I'm taking a pitcher there most likely.
See, because I usually go hitter, pitcher. A lot of my drafts I've done that. Royce falls in the fourth. It's like super tempting because I believe in the skill set. I understand the volatility is there. I don't think he's a 300 hitter because I think there's a little more swing and miss in that game than maybe he got away with. But I do believe the tools, and we know that. But the injury concerns are very real. So this will be like where this is where I kind of finally start taking that dip into that injury risk. I don't like to do it. This is as early as I'll do it because last year I was kind of like, okay, cool, I'll take some Jazz Chisholm because Jazz was that guy, and it worked out ish. Like there was ups and downs with having him, but I liked having him as long as you build for him, because if you build the proper depth and you hit on some guys late, that replacement value helps bridge that gap, and that's honestly doable in DCs. So Royce is that guy where it's like I'm willing to take that first dip into the injury potential type of thing there. So I understand being out on him, though. You're not alone. It's actually pretty common, but I do agree. But again, it goes back into if he's the 47th guy off the board, even early fourth, I don't think I've taken him there. But I got him in the fifth, and that was a gift. Maybe that was just luck. I like him in the fifth round. I'll take him in mid to late fourth, early fourth. I like his min pick was 33. Man, like I'm not touching him. That's a third. Like I'm not touching him there. He's just going around pick 50. But again, this is just a bunch of pitchers like Screwball. I haven't gotten any. I don't think I'm going to, just because I'm okay. I get it. I really do understand the appeal. I just prefer, I'll take Nola just because I know Nola's ceiling isn't what we saw at Screwball, but man, do I know what I'm getting there. And I know there's some volatility there, but I don't know, man. Screwball is such a small sample, and I know there's some legit changes, but he also had cake matchups. I'm scared. Are you okay with Screwball? Do you have more confidence in him? I'm legitimately scared of him. I need to do more. I need to look into him a lot more.
I haven't taken any Screwball yet, no.
Is it the same thing? Just like the uncertainty of like the small sample type of thing?
It's a little bit of that. A little bit of the team context as well.
That division is very winnable though. So I wouldn't.
And, it is.
And it's a great home ballpark. So there's that. I'm just putting it out there. See, I understand it. I think it's a matter of I'm more comfortable with Nola, I'm taking a guy ahead of Screwball that I'm more comfortable with. Everyone, like, it's no secret. I like Tyler Glasnow. How the hell do I like Tyler Glasnow, but I'm not in on Screwball when they're like kind of the same. It's kind of the same argument for both, right? Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where I need to really reevaluate the Screwball thing, because I there's gotta be something. I'm sure I'm gonna love it when I look more, but it's one of those things where I'm still just very, very, I'm scared, man. I'm very scared and skeptical. A lot of those outings,
there's a lot to like. I mean, a ton of swing and miss, lower the walk rate. I mean, I don't know. I think I might have to I think I might have to get me a Scooball share.
Yeah, five of his starts last year went less than five innings. So it's like, was he successful? Yeah. Let me see his splits third time through the order. Because he has some seven, six. He ended up doing quite a few six and seven inning outings. But I'm curious that did the numbers get carried by going shorter through the outings? So
seven inning outings are also the White Sox, the Angels, and the A's.
He actually cruised through the He cruised through the third time through the order, but the second time through the order, he had a 5.10 ERA the second time through the order. So he actually got saved by those third time through the order outings. That's crazy. He had a 5.10 ERA second time through the order. Funny. He decimates you. Teams adapt and he readapts. That's what it looks like right now. But yeah, it's one of those things where, oh yeah, that was another thing. Look at his schedule. I've heard mention of his schedule, and it's Royals, Oakland, Angels, White Sox, Yankees, who were a bottom five scoring team last year. Yankees, the Cubs. Okay, that was a good one. Cleveland, Boston, that was mediocre, hit or miss. And they actually hit him for 4 earned runs. The Cubs hit him for 4 earned runs. The Marlins got him for 4 earned runs. But the Rays, okay, the Rays was a good. But you see, like more Oakland, the Blue Jays underperformed last year. Royals, Giants, Marlins. Like, these are his matchups. Scooball had a really great set of matchups. And I don't think much is going to change this year. He'll probably still, especially that division. I know it's not as many division games, but he still gets to face that pretty soft division. So I don't know, man. Like I see the appeal, but there's just a lack of track record for me that really just scares me with Scooball. Yeah. But I'm with you. I don't think he's somebody I should fully fit. I'm doing four more DCs, five. I'll count the one I just started. I'm doing a total of nine. I'll get a Scooball share or two for sure, because I don't want to. There's FOMO there. There's enough there for me to question if I should be in or out. So I'll get a share or two because I don't think I should be out fully. So technically I'm out right now, but I won't say I'm out. It's most things where there's just so much to consider here. And probably wasted way more. We wasted too much time being wishy-washy. But yes, Nola, do you have any? I just think Nola is who he is. I think last year was kind of like a bad luck home run thing. I think he can fix that. I don't know. Maybe it's just me being blindly optimistic because I didn't have him on any important teams. But I love the price of him now. I think he's still Aaron Nola.
Yeah. Well, it's an even year, so I think he's going to be just fine.
Him and Mookie did the same thing, right? Even years, odd years.
Yeah. No. I mean, I think he's fine. He's bankable with the volume and strikeouts. Just kind of have to hope I don't like doing that though. I mean, you hope that the ERA lands in a decent range there.
He had a 3.75 Sierra for what it's worth, and that's kind of like one of the bigger metrics that we like to look at. So it was still the highest it's been in years. Like, so he earned some of that bad luck, but we're still talking about a Sierra that's almost a full run lower than his production, like two-thirds of a run lower. So that's why it's like I have optimism for Nola. I mean, I still think he's closer to the high threes ERA guy, so I'd rather him not be my ace, but he's the type of guy that I love pairing. If I can get Nola Scooball like on a turn, or if I can do Nola and Freddy Peralta, or Nola and I'm just looking at other names here. Snell, like if you, I'm not a Snell, I have no Snell by the way, but if I was going to take Snell, I would want a guy like Nola where I could bank on the innings. And I think Nola's a great anchor. I just don't like Nola as my ace if I can avoid it, but he's been my ace, so to speak, because he's been my first pitcher off the board in a couple DCs where I waited on the starting pitching. And I think that's my cutoff line, and I don't like it honestly, but I tolerate it, if that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. There's just some guys I like later. Like you got about 14, 15 picks later. You have Framber, Webb, and Logan Gilbert. I like those guys. Like I'd rather just like wait around and take those guys, or I would probably even just take them over Nola.
There you go. So you don't like Nola? Screw you. I like Nola. I'm blindly optimistic, baby. Blindly optimistic. Now, I do have like Yoshinobu Yamamoto ahead of him now, for what it's worth. Like, that's a guy going behind him. Freddie just scares me. I don't know why. I feel like Freddie's like really good, but then he could be like super inconsistent, loses feel of pitches. Velo can fluctuate. I don't know. Freddie's a guy that like I found myself like kind of out on just that price. Just again, goes with how I usually attack pitching. Usually don't land on Freddie. I know Bubba's a big Freddy guy, so if Bubba, you're listening, that's your boy. I get it, but I don't know, man. Maybe I'll be wrong. I have no Freddy, and I don't think I'm gonna land on Freddy with the way I've been drafting.
Yeah. But, yeah. I like I said, I've found myself just targeting like the pitchers, like going after that range. And I like the Framber, Webb, Gilbert, Fried. I haven't drafted Fried. I don't think I will. The injury concerns kind of scared me off of that. I do like Grayson, what he did in the second half, the pedigree, the park, the team. I really like Grayson.
You're getting into that round. So these are the guys. So you like to attack pitching in the fifth round. You're getting into the fifth round right now. Pick 61 through 75 is where you're kind of living in right now. So yeah, we can just jump to it because is there anybody real quick before you jump into those pitchers though that you like to target? Because that's the fifth round. Is there anybody in the fourth round? Like Bellinger, I haven't landed on him once. I don't completely buy the bounce back, and I think that's all it is for me. And
I have taken a Nolan Jones.
I know you mentioned that you like him there, but I like him. He falls to the fifth right now. I've been seeing him in the fifth rounds, and I like Nolan. I came in with this was like, and I'll let you talk about Nolan Jones for sure. Everyone knows I love Nolan Jones. I came in with these prices in my head. I'm like, all right, fourth round Royce Lewis and fifth round Nolan Jones, I can get behind. They started being drafted third and fourth round. I'm like, well, those were my prices. I can't get behind these prices. Again, this was without running projections or anything. They're falling to the prices I put in my head for them, so now they're becoming more appealing to me. But I have zero Nolan Jones. You got him though, right?
Yeah, I do have one Nolan Jones, and I don't really mind his price in the fifth round or fourth round. It's like middle of the fourth. He could fall to the fifth. If he falls to the fifth, that's great. I don't really mind that. Went 20-20 and only 424 plate appearances. The strikeouts are there, but I mean, playing in Coors, you know that BABIP is going to be propped up. He's not going to hit 297, but even if he hits, like, he's projected to hit 265. That's what Steamer has him projected for. Even if he hits 255. If he hits 255 in Coors and he's got that 20, like he already went 20-20, the batted ball metric, 15% barrel rate, 40.9% hard hit rate is fine, but like a lot of barrels, and does have that speed, 20 stolen bases on 24 attempts. I mean, there's like, is there 25-25 potential with 255 here? I mean, that's going to be, he's going to return better value than a fifth round bat right here. Like
you don't got to talk me into Nolan Jones. I love Nolan Jones. Yeah.
Like I don't mind taking that there.
I do know the only issue with Jones, and maybe this is where him being passive is a good thing, because Jones has issues with balls up in the zone, which is, if you ever watch him take swings, that shouldn't surprise you. But like he doesn't miss, like his whiff rates aren't awful in the middle and part of the zone and lower, but the top part of the zone, 53%, 57%, and 31%. So he can do up and in, he can handle a little better. But his biggest swing and miss areas are top of the zone and up and away, like away from the zone. So like if you go look at his, like I'm looking at right now at Nolan Jones's zones on Baseball Savant for reference. So it's one of those things where if you look at it, and this, again, if you watch his swing, it's a looping swing, it doesn't surprise you, but pitchers have to hit that spot, and you miss that spot, he makes you pay. Nolan Jones is a very patient hitter, and yes, there's some swing and miss in his game, but I think he's patient by, like, that's just the way he is, and I think it's because of how he attacks and how he prefers to attack things. If you go look at all of his ex-wobo across the top of the zone, is like sub 200 across the board. Everything, man. ISOs are zero. He has zero ISO cross. He had zero ISO, and his X ISOs are almost zero across the top of the zone. I think he purposely just doesn't swing at that stuff because he knows it's not his strength. But the thing is when Nolan, having such a good eye like Jones does, the fact that he's so patient and has eye he has, I don't see it as a typical weakness that it is for other hitters. Like he swings and misses, sure, but he also just doesn't swing a whole lot there. I'm trying to find the swing rates.
Yeah, and he doesn't have like, he doesn't have like big platoon splits. Like he's a lefty hitter, and he doesn't have like the big platoon splits. 902 OPS versus left, 945 OPS versus right.
It's crazy. He just sits on his pitches. So if you look at his swing percentage by zone, he'll swing at the stuff up in the zone, but it's like 54%, 52%, but 40s across the up and away, it's 49%, 49%, 46% away. He does, it's like 60% or more in each of the little squares down the middle and in. Down the middle and low. He has a preference of where he swings, which is crazy to just see, like pitchers can attack him all they want. He just spits on them and he doesn't even care. And I think that's why, you know, like if he was more aggressive, there's probably a reason why he's not more aggressive. He waits for his pitch and he attacks, it looks like. And that people underestimate that, people just take the numbers at face value. I think he's always gonna be a high strikeout guy because of that. Nolan Jones, I'm talking about here. I think he's always gonna be a high strikeout guy because of his approach, but I think it's by design and he succeeds because of how he attacks the pitching. So I don't know, or attacks the zone and whatnot. So I don't know. I like Nolan Jones. I've always liked him, but I do think that it's scary. It's definitely a scary pick. I'm going to get probably a share or two. And I honestly expect him to fall to the fifth, sometimes the sixth, as pitchers get pushed up, as we get closer to the fab leagues and stuff like that. So I think his price is only going to get better. I think it already is. We're seeing him fall, you know? I'm going to be more in the more he falls, the more in I'll be. Because guys like Matt McClain right there, I like a lot. And it's like, I don't mind taking Jones over McClain, but I think McClain has a safer floor and a similar, you know, ballpark's great too. I trust the playing time. So McClain's a guy that's like, I tend to give a little preference to because I trust the bat to ball skills a little more. And I tend to give that, I tend to favor that always in a player. It's just kind of a personal preference in my analysis. Like I always tend to give guys with contact skills a little more preference when I'm building a team because I trust the production more when that player has that. But I don't know. I want some Nolan Jones for sure because I can't ever quit him. Nico Horner, he's very team specific. I have a couple shares, but it's more team build. Like did I take Matt Olson in the first or second round? Well, I need speed, I need more batting average. That's where Nico Horner comes in. So I think Nico Horner is very build specific. I like him a lot. I know a lot of people don't like him because he's very boring and but again, it goes back into how we're building our rosters here, right? I think he fits certain roster builds very well.
Yeah. He's someone that, like, if you did take a Pete Alonso at the end of the second, like, then you have to get someone like Nico Horner.
Be careful. There is injury risk there, though. There is injury risk there. And I
understand what had me off of him last year was like the injury risk with Horner was
now you're paying for it.
Year. Yeah, and he was healthy last year. But yeah, it's just too much for me. Like he's 58 now overall in DCs. Yep. I think for me it's too team specific. It's too you got to make up the power. And yeah, for me, I'm not in on Horner here.
I'm trying to remember. I have him on a team. I want to know. I'm trying to remember who my first round pick was. It might have been like an Aaron Judge team or something, mm-hmm. which made sense to me. Like, let me secure some batting average and stolen bases because Judge, although will steal some bags, I like Judge as a. It's almost like the old school. If you take Schwarber, you got to take Arias. Or if you take Gallo, you got to take Arias, which is funny because I actually have a DC where I purposely took Schwarber and Arias, just like, makes sense in my head. But it's one of those, I hate that because Arias, and we can talk about him later, just those types of players where they are they can be such negative in other ways that it does you no good to just, you're almost better off ignoring those types of like skills, like one, like the carrying skill being a batting average thing. Well, Arias is what, like a two category guy between batting average and runs, maybe. So you're taking a negative in home runs, and people don't factor in the negative stats that they bring. Because like, well, what do you mean negative? They do these, yeah, but it's negative because they're not producing near what they should for that position on your roster in those other stats that you. So you need to be very comfortable with streaming or making it up somehow. But that's another discussion for another day. That goes more into strategy talk. Real quick, because we're running pretty long. Yeah, of course we're running an hour. We didn't get through anything. So let's run through some of these rounds real quick. There's just so much to talk about, obviously, the closer landscape. So we talked, where are we at? What round are we? I forgot what pick we're going to be. I'm looking at, so 61st, so around pick 90 enters the sixth round, right? So we'll go around there. You mentioned these pitchers, though. You obviously, Bobby Miller, Jesus Luzardo. We skipped on catchers. I think we talked about catchers last week, though. Like, we just like the certain range, so catchers this early aren't for us. I think we both agree with that, right? We don't have to elaborate. Maybe I like JT if he falls to a certain spot, but
yeah, I like JT. Probably not like it. It's just not what I'm gonna be doing is taking early catchers, at least in 15 teamers. But if there's anyone here that I like, yeah, it would be JT. Otherwise, I think there's guys going later that kind of provide similar value.
Are you in or out on Trout?
Oh man,
pick 73. I have yet to take him, so I guess I'm out because he never seems to fit any of the builds. Like I always need speed there, or I need something else. He's the guy. Like if I need power and upside, I'll take it there. but I haven't found, like, the way I've been building, he's never fit my team build, so I've no shares. Max pick of 100, that's, he wouldn't have made, I wouldn't have let him get that far down. Like, he's not, I just don't want him at 75. I want him, like, I would take him, I think I would take him around later, and around difference, it's like, do I want him or Gleyber Torres, him or Brian Reynolds? And that's where I think he belongs more so. And but he's going ahead of those guys, and that's where it's like, well, why take Wayne Trout? I could just take Goldschmidt, Yelich. I don't know. Like, I think there's other, Christian Walker. I don't see a whole. Oh no, I just don't mind waiting for those guys around later, and I'd rather attack a different.
Yeah, I mean, his projections aren't all too far off from like those first basemen that you mentioned. I'm with you. I'm not taking any Trout here,
which is unfortunate because I still think that he could spike an all-time year. And I think it's still within the range of possibilities, but we have to be realistic here, you know? The 35 home runs and 260 batting average, roughly give or take, on the projection, that's pretty much what Christian Walker did last year. That's why it's like Schwarber's going to hit for better or worse average, but Schwarber's going to hit more bombs, like, if you really wanted power, you know? So it's like, you can find that skill set a couple, like, around later is the thing. It's a matter of, do you think he's going to give you more than that? And do you think, projecting for 146 games is generous? He hasn't done that since 2016. 2016, 2016, 8 years ago. The highest game, the highest game total was 140 in 2018, 134 in 2019, and 119 in 2022. So 146 is very generous. I understand, because you have to project. You can't just project him for less than that. It's really probably not good, but maybe what you should do is you take your numbers, you run it at like 120, and you run it, and just to see what the projection looks like if he only plays 120 games, and then look around and see what type of skill set. You know, that's why I'm like, I'm with you. I know I'm elaborating more than I should, because we have to move on, because we have to get going here, but it's one of those things where I don't think you just, I don't know, man. Trout is just sad. It's a sad day where it's like Trout in the fifth or sixth round, and I'm not like all in on it. That's crazy. And then, what, the pitching over here, we talked about that already. I don't really think there's much to mention.
Yeah, there. If there's one guy that I think is being overdrafted that I'm not taking as far as the pitching goes, is, for me, it's Yuri Perez. I can't take Yuri at 75. And for me, it's the innings. For me, it's the workload. I think, you know, at 20 years old, 21 next year, or 21 in April, I'm just not sure how much the Marlins are going to let him go. And I think the skills are great. 15% swinging strike rate is incredible. And obviously he flashed, like, you know, really, really good. He performed well when he was pitching last year, 3.15 ERA, 91 innings. For me, it's just the innings concern. Like, if he's 120, 130 innings, like, that's still not, don't think that's someone that I want to take here as, like, you're probably taking as your SP3, SP2 or 3. So for me, Yuri, I won't have any Yuri here.
Well, the good thing is last year between the minors and majors, he put up, trying to do quick math, like 128, 129.
Yeah.
So there's a path there. I see 150, 160 in the cards. It's just a matter of how legitimate was the initial call up and how much should we factor in the struggles at the end? Was he just fatigued? Was there, like, because what was it? Because we saw how elite he was for that stretch. It was ridiculous how good he was when he first came up. And then we saw Yuri struggle towards the end, and I'm going to chalk it up to fatigue personally, because he just made such a big jump in innings. But I don't have the same concerns for innings here that you do.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, for me, it's the
17 innings in September, October with a 5.19 ERA compared to the August 3.48 ERA over 20 innings. It's like, it's just all small samples, right? But it's one of those things where Yuri finished so poorly, it can leave a bad taste in your mouth thinking, was it like, which one was it, just fatigue, or was it like, which Yuri is the real Yuri? It's hard to say. I believe in it. I believe in him. I'm okay with him there. The problem is I think there's more security with guys like Lizardo right there with him. Mm-hmm. Obviously Bobby Miller's getting some hype. You're seeing Bobby Miller get drafted ahead of him pretty often, but they go back to back. There's a reason. And Zach Eflin, kind of a guy that you can argue over Yuri. Joe Ryan has like the same upside, but hasn't given us the length of flashes. I feel like, but I think something about Ryan was pitching injury last year. So, but my point is that there's so many other options there. I get it. There's like safer ones and guys that offer kind of like, I don't know, similar upside, but with like a higher floor. So it's one of those things where I understand Yuri there, but I've also seen Yuri drop. Like, Yuri has a max pick of 99. I can get behind that. I understand why you don't want him there. I'm not so opposed to him. I think I have a share or two. But I think it came down to him or Lizardo, and I think I took Lizardo, and I think it's because I trust the innings more. But, man, Lizardo's whip can really torch you, so you have to be careful there. Real quick, we'll just go through the rest of these picks here. So pick 100, so up to pick 100, so around 7 or 8. Is there anybody here between – Yuri's around pick 75, so last 25 picks in ADP through 75 to 100. You have guys like Stott, Fairbanks, Helsley, Schwarber. A lot of it's at this point, I start figuring out my team builds and which players fit the best. I think Torres is very, very solid. I like Torres a lot. A little bit of pop, a little bit of speed is going to hit towards the top of the order in New York. A lot of RBI opportunities, assuming unless he leads off, which I don't have him predicting the lead off, but if he did, it wouldn't surprise me. But I think he's going to bat closer to cleanup, actually, which will offer a lot of potential for opportunities for RBI. Torres is a guy I like, and I think he's just kind of solid, safe, and almost boring. And same goes for Christian Walker. And I like these guys here. I like to target hitters more than pitchers here. Where are you at in this final 25 picks?
Exactly. Yeah. Just because if I have taken my three starters by the sixth round, then yeah, this is where I'm going back to hitters. I haven't taken any of the pitchers going here. Like
I've taken Zach Eflin.
Yeah, I haven't taken Eflin, Joe Ryan.
I like those guys though. I like them. I just have you. Yeah, like, it's one of those things where I haven't built for that yet. I attend attack pitching so early that I like these guys. Oh, I don't allow myself a chance to get them because I'm too busy drafting pitching too early.
Right. No. Yeah. I'm with you there. The guys you mentioned are the ones that I've been targeting here. O'Neill Cruz. I really like his price. I've seen him. I've taken him.
You're not afraid, huh? I've seen. You're either in or out on Cruz. You know what I mean? It's hard to be in between. I'm more out than in. I've realized. I don't know why. I guess it's because I'm looking and I see what's his face the round before and sometimes right around the same round, Jazz. And I rather have Jazz. And I know it's a round. I know it's literally a one round difference. But I've seen Jazz fall an extra round here and there. That's why his max pick is 98. And I'd rather have Jazz personally. But it's one of those things where maybe it's because I haven't seen O'Neill Cruz. I remember O'Neill Cruz. But the tools are very reminiscent of that player. What's his face? De La Cruz.
Ellie.
Yeah. And I think that's the easy comp. I think that's the boring comp. But I think that's the comp that exists for a reason because it's very flashy tools. I don't know, man. You have confidence in O'Neill Cruz. But obviously, he's healthy. He is healthy. He has said that much. He's practicing sliding now, thankfully, because apparently he didn't before, I guess.
But, yeah, I mean, it was...
You find yourself interested in him?
Yeah. I mean, we mentioned, the tools are incredible. It was only 40 plate appearances, but, we saw a little bit of improvement. I think that improvement kind of started at the end of 2022, though. And we kind of saw it carry over into the very small sample in 2023 as far as the better contact. I'm willing to take the chance there at pick 88. I think he can he's projected. His projections have him for 25, 21, 251. I'll take that at that price all day. And I understand the concerns, but it was kind of a freak thing.
It really was.
He has mentioned this offseason that he has learned to slide. He's been working on his sliding. So hopefully he's not breaking his ankle again. I'm willing to take him at this cost. I think there that upside that that 2020 upside there, I'll take it.
Yeah, I get it, but I find myself always just preferring the the reason why I'm out on him is because I like that safety of the guys like Torres, Reynolds, Walker, even Schwarber. If I really need power, I know the batting average issues, but Arenado, we're talking about floor. This is the area where there's nothing but Bregman. I just keep naming names. They're just, the floor is so high here that I find myself not targeting Cruz. And part of that, I think the reason why I don't target Cruz also plays into the fact of how I attack my teams a certain way. And I tend to get those category bases, like the power speed guys in the early rounds. That's usually my first couple hitters, which opens me up to taking more. I think I usually end up needing more power or balance there. And maybe because of that is why I get away from Cruz and go towards those names I mentioned, because there's more balance and there's more specific need base. Like Reynolds and Torres are about as balanced as you get. And then you have Schwarber if you need pop. And then you have Christian Walker if you need pop. A little less pop than Schwarber, obviously, but with a little more balance in the profile. Same could be said for Goldschmidt. And then you have Yelich, who was probably going to give you 25-25, right? But we know, but you could almost feel a little more safe that O'Neal Cruz has that ceiling, whereas Yelich kind of is the floor play with maybe more of like a 25-15 floor at this point in his career. Yeah. So it's one of those things where, I know a guy who I'm out on, Ha-Seong Kim. I just can't get behind that price. I realize that I have zero interest. Like I'm not even tempted to take him. I probably should give a reason, huh? I don't know. I think it's just, I don't have a whole reason. I think it was, I looked into him and I should have probably had notes. 1738, 260. That screams CJ Abrams, right? So why would I like Abrams? Why wouldn't I want Abrams type of guy that late? I don't know, man. It was something about him. Oh, it was like he had 18 home runs with a 4.2% barrel rate and a 26.2% hard hit rate. He his ex-wOBA was like 20 points lower, roughly. His ex-slug was about 40 points lower than his actual. So he managed to make most of the power in spite of having metrics that back the power. We know the contact skills are legit. There's like no swing and miss to Kim's game. I don't know. I don't buy the power. The 17 home runs feels fluky at this point, but the 38. So I know there's stolen bases there. I know the batting average is okay, not great. And I think that's what it is. I view him as runs, stolen bases, and he won't kill you in batting average. But I don't know. I think that's what it is. I don't think there's enough. It's Nico Hoerner, basically, right? It's a kind of like fair way of putting it. It's like kind of like another Nico Hoerner, but at least Nico Hoerner has the speed and the has the batting average I feel safer about with Nico. Is what it is, I guess.
Yeah,
but still, it's if you I don't know. I just find
I haven't found myself taking Kim either. And for me, it's like you said, like he definitely overperformed on the power.
And honestly, I'm second guessing if I should be in on Hoerner, because the more I look at other profiles, I'm seeing a lot of very Hoerner light profiles that I can get like 100 pick, like legitimately Hoerner, like guys that I maybe they don't come with that level of safety and they don't come with the batting average security that we talked about really preferring. So maybe that's why I still value Hoerner where he's going. But I'm seeing a lot of guys where if I don't need speed, I'm not taking Hoerner at all, because I see speed options later that I trust to be very similar in production. So Hoerner is very, very team build specific, honestly. And I like him. I really do like him a lot. I'm saying that I'm genuine. I have the receipts, if you will. I make sure if I say I'm in on a guy, I can show you some shares of him. So, well, you draft so many teams. Well, that's fair. but I wouldn't even doing 90 Cs is not considered volume in today's day and age. So if I'm drafting 9, that's still not enough teams for me to be like, let me make sure I get a little bit of everything. I'm still drafting a lot of the same guys with some variance with how I build and who I build around. But like it's a lot of similarities, especially in the late round. But anyway, that's going to do it for me. You have anything to add, George, or you want to get out of here? George, did I lose you? Oh, I lost you. No. All right. Well, that's going to do it for the podcast. You can follow George on Twitter at @Roto_Nino. You can follow me on Twitter at @Mike_Kurland. And that was episode 206. We'll be back next week, I think. Talk soon.